Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Steve Frampton, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. This evening, we'll be discussing out-of-body experiences with our special guest, Graham Nichols, English author, artist, and expert on out-of-body experiences. Now, before we get started with Graham, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. Good evening, Maureen.
Good evening, Steve. How are you?
I am very well, Maureen. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so kindly much.
Good. Well, always happy to have you on the show, Maureen, each week. It's always a lot of fun. Can you tell us a little about your work?
Yes, I can. I work with everybody, well, as my co-hosts do as well, and I at PsychicAccess.com. And I am an empath, intuitive, advisor, psychic. I have all those clairs things going on. I'm well versed in tarot. And I do my work because I must. And I enjoy it, but it is what I was supposed to be doing, and I'm doing it. And I can help people in the direction that might be best for them, and my intentions are good. It's always with good intentions. There well, you have it.
Well, thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
I know you have good intentions, and I know you do wonderful work as well. Now, Brenda, how are you today?
I'm doing real good. It's a beautiful day again in Southern California. Just awesome. And
it's rainy in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, well, you know, if there was time travel, we'd have you come to California, like, instantaneously.
I know. I might have Graham deal with that, see if he can transport.
Won't that be great? Oh, that would be awesome.
Could you tell us about your work, Brenda?
Well, I work at PsychicAccess.com with all you wonderful people. I'm kind of an old school psychic. I'm a predictive psychic. I do crystal ball, tarot, sometimes, and I use the playing cards sometimes. And I specialize in dates, times, and places.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Brenda.
Welcome.
We have Bobby with us as well. Bobby, good evening.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you today, Bobby?
I'm doing quite wonderfully. Thank you.
Good man. Well, can you tell us a little about your work?
Absolutely. Like you, I'm also a medium, psychic medium, so I tune into energies of the people who are here and asking questions about their lives, and then sometimes you have people that want to know about their loved ones on the other side, and if they're coming through, or if they're okay, or sometimes specific questions, you know, to try to help heal them past their grief, and that's what I do also. I always thought that was the, you know, when I first looked, I thought that was like the ultimate form of healing. You know, this is when I was kind of first starting and everything. I just loved so much how healing it can be to be in touch with your loved ones. And I've found it to be so, but I no longer believe it's the ultimate healing now, of course. But I think it's a great avenue to heal past grief.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Bobby. And thank you for being here this evening. It's going to be a fun show. As I said earlier, we've got Graham Nichols with us, and Graham he was born in London, so he's a fellow Brit, but he lives in Tallinn, Estonia, and he is an expert on out-of-body experiences, so he's going to be sharing his knowledge and experience with us this evening. Graham, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful. Well, it's great to have you with us, Graham. I know we're going to have an exciting a show. This is such a fascinating subject. Can we start by asking you what kind of experiences people have when they are able to travel out of their bodies?
Well, that's a very wide question. There's a whole range of different types of experiences that people have, from from just moving out of their body and seeing themselves from above is one of the most classic scenarios that most people are familiar with, right through to going into other levels of reality and feeling that their whole consciousness essentially has become expanded and connected with the universe in some way. So it covers a real spectrum of different kinds of experiences.
This, that sounds incredible, Graham. Can anybody learn to travel out of their body?
I think so, yes. I think when I've worked with people over the years, you sometimes come into contact with people who doubt that they'd be able to learn it, or, you know, sometimes think they're too old to learn something like this. You hear lots of things like that from people, but once they engage with the techniques and if they go through the process of working with it in a regular way, like you would learning any skill in life, if they develop that and they work with that over time, they'll find that they can learn it. And I haven't really come across anyone who absolutely could not learn it. So I think it's an amazing thing that is open to pretty much anyone. And it's just a matter of that engagement with the process, like developing any psychical skill or any other ability, really.
I know, Graham, in discussion with you prior to the show, you were telling me that you had an out-of-body experience and you in which you saw precognitively the Soho bombing. Could you tell us a little about that experience?
Sure. Well, I've had two precognitive out-of-body experiences. The first was the Soho bombing, and the second was of the London bombings in 2005. So I've had the two. The first one was the most challenging, in a sense, because it really made me think about the whole idea of time and space. And up until that point, I'd never really considered that you might be able to see an event before it happened. But this particular out-of-body experience was also probably the most intense out-of-body experience I've ever had. I was actually at a meeting, a group of, there was five of us all together, and I was teaching some techniques. It was the first time I actually taught the G technique, which is one of the sort of key techniques that I work with. And I was teaching this to the people in the sort of small gathering. And I was doing this technique and nothing particular was sort of happening. I thought, oh, it's sort of not working tonight or something along those lines. And then just as I started to think that, it was like something hit me. And I sort of didn't fall onto the ground, but I went onto the ground very quickly. I sort of got down onto the floor. And as I did, I just basically went into an out-of-body experience. And first I was going through a natural environment, sort of quite forest-like. And then after a few seconds of that, it seemed to break and switch into this other experience where I was standing on the corner of Old Compton Street in central London and looking down the street. And as I stood there, I didn't really move. I just stood there. It was like I had a physical body, kind of felt like a physical body anyway. I was looking around and everything seemed very, very real, very, very vivid, although everything was tinted with a kind of bluish grey quality, which had only ever happened once before. One of the first verifiable out-of-body experiences I'd ever had. So it made me sort of pay attention, and plus I had this intense realism about the whole thing. And anyway, I was standing there looking down the street, and then an explosion burst out from the right hand side of the road, and I remember a man running close by me, looking to my right and seeing there was a sort of Italian restaurant that is not there anymore, but at the time it was quite a sort of well-known famous restaurant. So that verified again where exactly I was. because I knew the area well. And then the sort of general chaos started to happen all around me as a result of the explosion. And then I felt this sort of intense wave of emotion hit me, almost like I was experiencing the anguish coming from the people who had been in the explosion. So it was this sort of multi-leveled experience, really. And then as that happened, I sort of came out of the out-of-body experience, but I didn't just come straight back to normal conscious awareness. It was quite a process to get to that point. I remember there was one of the people there had to sort of help me get back into sort of normal consciousness. So it was a very intense, very powerful experience. And then afterwards, we had a discussion. We all sat round, and I said to the people there that I've just seen this bombing in Soho, and I'm pretty sure that it's a precognitive thing. I think this is going to happen. So it was unusual in that sense that there were people there when the out-of-body experience happened, and they witnessed me telling them that I thought this was going to happen. And then 5 days later, the actual explosion happened, basically exactly as I'd seen it. So, yeah, that really shook up my whole idea of how time and space worked, really.
Well, absolutely, because it's proof that that time is not as straightforward or as linear as we generally presume, because you traveled through time to see something in the future.
Sure. I mean, there are other possible explanations, like tuning in to the intention of the person who did it, or things like that. But it did seem very much like it was some kind of traveling into another time, for sure. It really, really challenged me anyway. And then it happened again with the 2005 bombings on the underground system. So it was with that one, I went down into the pavement into Moorgate station, and then I basically followed the train along into Liverpool Street, and then it disappeared out from Liverpool Street, and I stayed at Liverpool Street, and the explosion happened again, and I felt this wave of emotion much like the first experience. And it also had this bluish grey quality, cerulean sort of quality that I've come to associate with those experiences now.
And so, Graham, how often are your out-of-body experiences precognitive? And how often are they other experiences?
Oh, usually they're not precognitive. Those experiences are very rare. It's only been those two times that it's actually been precognitive in nature. I mean, I've had mild precognitive type experiences where just a sense of something before it happens, in the way that most people have sort of deja vu type experiences. But in general, that level of accuracy and intensity is very, very rare.
So it sounds extremely powerful. What scientific evidence is there for out-of-body experiences?
Well, amazingly, out-of-body experiences specifically haven't been researched to that degree. Most of the research was done in the 60s. There was a famous case, for example, Charles Tart. He's a famous parapsychologist, did a study of an anonymous woman who he named Miss Z, and he had her in his laboratory for a few days, and she was supposed to try and identify a 5-digit number that was hidden on the wall in the laboratory. And then on the final day, she had an out-of-body experience, and then managed to accurately tell him what the number was. The odds of her getting it was something like 100,000 to 1. So that's one of the more famous cases of an experiment that was set up to study out-of-body experiences. More recently, there's been some researchers in Italy who've done work with trying to induce out-of-body experiences through hypnosis, and specifically focusing on the hypnagogic state, the point before you fall asleep, when you often get sort of imagery and colour and things like that coming through your mind. So they use that state in order to try and get people to have out-of-body experiences and then see how accurate they are in their perceptions. And in those studies, they found that they were significantly accurate in what they saw. And then if you go into near-death research, which is probably the area related to out-of-body experiences that has the most study in the current situation. And in areas like that, there's the work of Janice Holden, for example, who looked at all of the available cases that she could find and checked them for their accuracy in terms of objectively. They call it veridical evidence, i.e. accurate information that came through the near-death or out-of-body experience through the near-death experience. And she found that 92% were 100% accurate. They were completely, there were no mistakes at all. Another 6% had a few inaccuracies, but they were generally accurate, and only the final 2% were completely false, so hallucinations or whatever. So that really flies in the face of a lot of the skeptical claims and arguments that are out there.
Well, we were talking before the show, Graham, about, like, on our conference call, about wisdom teeth, because I have to have a wisdom tooth removed next week. And so we were talking a little about anesthetic. And I've had a couple of procedures in the past and passed under anesthetic with quite interesting experiences, quite interesting spiritual experiences as the anesthetic kicks in. Has there been any research on anesthesia and out-of-body experiences?
Well, it's one of the areas in terms of near-death research that two of the main areas that skeptics will say explain near-death experiences are either that the out-of-body experience was induced by the anesthesia, like you say, or some other drug that was being administered, or it was to do with lack of oxygen in the brain, hypoxia or apoxia in the specifics of that kind of situation. The interesting thing is that when that has been researched again and looked at the oxygen levels, for example, in different cases, it's been found that there's not really any correlation there. Sometimes there's actually increased levels of oxygen in the people who have had the out-of-body experience, so it really doesn't correlate. And then there's also plenty of situations where an out-of-body experience has happened where the person is not being given any medication at that particular point. And, you know, someone like me, for example, who's never used any form of drug, including alcohol and nicotine. So I think the sort of drugs explanations are kind of lacking. And also when you look at the types of experiences people describe on some form of drug, they're very different to the coherence of the out-of-body type states. So, for example, Penny Sartori, who's a British researcher who's looked at near-death experiences, she looked at a lot of the cases to see if the drug that was being administered at any particular point could have explained things. And again, she found that the descriptions that people gave when they were having a drug-type experience were very, very different and much more hallucinatory than the ones when they were having an out-of-body experience or a semi-near-death experience.
I know you told me as well, Graham, when we were speaking previously, that you've done some work with Rupert Sheldrake. Could you tell us a little about Rupert and the work that you've done with him?
Sure. Well, Rupert does some amazing work looking at the whole area of psi and psychical abilities in general. His main area really is telepathy. And I was very interested in his research, and I contacted him, and we met up a few times, and then he suggested to me that I help him arrange some research. So I basically helped arrange the location. We wanted to find a location specifically that would cancel out the possibility of cheating using mobile phones or any kind of devices, because one of the accusations put forward by skeptics was that people could have been using some form of mobile phone or other communication device in order to get a high significant result in the telepathy experiments. So we found an underground basement that was basically shielded from mobile signals. And then I also got hold of a device that cancels out any signals within 100 meters that we had within the room that the people taking part didn't know of. And so we conducted the experiments in that kind of condition, and we had people regularly coming through over a few days, and the results were consistent with the other experiments that Rupert's done over the years. And that data fed into his computerized database, because the whole thing with the telepathy experiments is they're all computer run. So what would happen is someone would go into a room, they would give us the phone numbers of three or four people who were close to them, so someone they were emotionally linked to. That seems to be important in all psychic experiments. And these numbers would be entered into a computer system, and then that person would be randomly called, and then the connection would be randomly put through to the person sitting doing the experiment. So then they would have to answer the phone, and they would hear a computerized voice that would ask them to select who they think is waiting to be put through to them. So then they would select the number they think, and then the line would open, and they would find out whether they were right or wrong. So it's a very controlled way of doing the experiment, because if there's no human factor involved, if it's done through a computer system, it's much more likely that the information will be accurate.
I read the fact that when it comes to precognition, people seem to tune in better when their feelings are involved, or when there's an emotional situation or tragedy. It seems as though we tune in precognitively when potentially there's a sense of danger, and on some level it's an intrinsic part of our ability to remain safe. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there are some theories put forward that telepathy and these kinds of abilities are something to do with our survival instinct. They're linked with our evolutionary need to survive and to be aware of potential danger in the future and things like that. It would have an advantage if we had this kind of ability. So that's definitely one theory that's put forward. I mean, there definitely seems to be a link with all psychic abilities and the level of emotion involved. Go on.
Sorry, Graham, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead. I was going to ask you another question. I'm just so fascinated, but please go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
For example, Dean Radin has done work with precognition where he's used unconscious cues. So this could be eye movements, it could be electrical activity in the skin, And what he'll do is he'll monitor that and then show people calm images or highly emotional images, and then monitor what's happening to them unconsciously. So they're not even aware that they're responding to something. And then what he's found is that the response to the highly emotional images happens just before the image is actually shown. So there's a unconscious precognitive response taking place, which again backs up the whole idea that there's some form of sense of a future event, which is also backed up by the recent research from Daryl Bem, which has caused a lot of a lot of controversy, shall we say, in the scientific community, because he took some basic psychological tests and he time reversed them. So you basically ended up with this precognitive test rather than a standard psychology test, and it's very hard to find any flaws or problems with his experiments. So it's I think when scientists really take a look at the work that people are doing in this area, they find very quickly that there is actually very good evidence for most of these things.
And how widely do you find this is accepted in the scientific community, Graham? Because I know, for example, from reading Dean Radin's books, that he's really at the leading edge, but it's almost as though scientifically it's risky to commit your career to the research of extrasensory perception and this kind of experience, because there's a lot of skepticism. But do you feel that there's any shift in the scientific community towards more openness or more appreciation of this kind of experience?
I think there's always a combination of opinions. I think you always have scientists who are open to it, and you always have scientists who are very closed and want to just maintain the status quo. I think a lot of scientists perceive these kinds of things as being linked to religion or superstition or areas that they don't really want to be associated with, or they feel are actually harmful in some way. So I think there's a genuine fear in a way of becoming too open to these kinds of ideas, so that there's a caution, if you like. But I think at the same time, there are a lot of scientists who are interested in these things. There's unfortunately a lot of scientists who are essentially in the closet. They're interested in these things. They believe in them, but they won't openly talk about it. They'll talk about it to people like me or to people like Dean Radin, but they won't openly talk about it because of concern over their careers and over how they'll be perceived and things like that. So it's a complicated area. I think though there has recently been a lot of research that's starting to challenge some of the preconceptions, and I think especially with areas like telepathy, I think people are becoming more open-minded, because the evidence with telepathy is probably the strongest of all the psychic areas, going back to the Ganzfeld experiments, which were using a form of mild sensory deprivation to put ordinary people into a light trance and then doing the telepathy experiments with them. So they found that the light trance would enhance their ability. So that's also something that's been very, very successful. I mean, according to Dean Radin, 29 quintillion to one was the odds in favor of telepathy when you looked at the Ganzfeld experiments in a meta-analysis. So very, very, very strong statistical evidence.
Yeah, and I'm just so excited to speak to you to learn all about this, Graham, because it's such a fascinating subject. We're going to take a short commercial break, Graham, and then when we come back, I'd like to pick up on your comment about trance. and to ask you a little bit more about trance states. We'll be back in just one moment.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, welcome back, Graham. I want to pick up on your comment about trance. I know that there are different types of trance, different levels of trance, from a mild trance such as daydreaming. But on the spectrum, I guess, of trance states, where would you position out-of-body experiences?
Well, I'd say they're quite high, quite deep, essentially. I think if you think about the general psychical experiences, more like remote viewing, where you're still quite conscious and you're trying to perceive something with your sort of psychical senses, and it goes through a continuum. And then I think at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the out-of-body experience, because the body awareness essentially has become, well, you've lost it essentially, and you're just aware of this sensory self at another location. So it's a complete shift away from your usual body physical awareness. So I'd say that was very deep. I think the only level you could go further really is maybe sort of like the type of experience that people describe in the near-death experiences. So I think I think it's one of the deepest levels, certainly that I've experienced anyway. And I've worked with lots of different areas, from hypnosis through to telepathy and these kinds of things. So.
Well, I was reading, Graham, about the pineal gland, and DMT, the fact that the pineal gland creates a lot of DMT under times of great stress. And there's research that the greatest times of stress are birth and death, or passing to spirit, and that it's at those times that we create a huge amount of DMT. What's your view or your understanding of the connection between the outer body experience and the pineal gland, or any of the chakras, I guess?
Well, I think the whole thing with the pineal gland, it's very hard to say, really. I think there's been a lot of talk about it for a very long time, and it was very popular at one point, and then it sort of became less popular as an explanation for psychical functioning, and then it became sort of more popular again since the link with dimethyltryptamine, the DMT. So it's gone through various phases of being the various idea that people support in terms of this sort of thing. But personally, I'm also interested in the pineal gland in terms of its effect on sleep patterns and how we regulate our normal sleeping times and things like that. So it's not just the DMT factor, it has other elements to it as well. I think we have to say we don't know, basically, is the thing with the pineal gland. I think from what people have identified, looking at the brain and what's going on in the brain when people have psychical type experiences, it seems that the whole brain is active, really. It's almost like you're perceiving something through another sense, and your brain is activating as it would if you were physically walking around. So, for example, Ingo Swann, he's one of the original remote viewers and has also experienced out-of-body states and areas like that. Michael Persinger did some research looking at his brain activity and found that the parietal-occipital junction in his brain had strange electrical discharges and was activated at certain points when he was psychically perceiving. Now, you would kind of expect that those parts of the brain would be active at a time when he was physically doing something. So essentially it's like the same parts of his brain were activated when he was doing something psychical. So there's the whole possibility that maybe even the brain is like some kind of receiver. A lot of researchers from Pimban Lomor, who's looked at near-death experiences probably more than anyone else, believes that the brain might be more like a receiver. And this is a very popular opinion through a lot of different researchers who are especially looking at near-death and out-of-body experiences.
Well, can you tell us, Graham, how you correlate your knowledge of out-of-body experiences and your experience of out-of-body experiences with your spiritual beliefs?
I think they led in to each other in a sense. I think when I first started exploring the out-of-body experience, it wasn't something that I was majorly thinking of in a spiritual context. Like a lot of British people, I grew up in a kind of lapsed Church of England kind of situation. My parents no longer believe or practice any of those kinds of things, but they didn't have any particular belief against it either. It was just something that was in my roots. And the same with sort of paranormal type things. If there was an article about it in a newspaper, they might read it, but they had no particular interest in that area. So when I was growing up, I didn't have anything to draw on in my roots in a sort of spiritual level. But then when I started to have out-of-body experiences and I started to explore this whole area, which just really happened to me spontaneously. I mean, it started with an apparition that I saw when I was very young, maybe 5 to 7 years old. That was the first thing I ever saw, just walking out into the hallway of my apartment where I grew up and seeing this apparition, and just being really terrified by that. But that just opened up this whole idea that there was more to reality. And then when I was 12 years old, I had a few very short out-of-body experiences where I was kind of vertical, floating a few feet above the ground. And that was when I really thought, I want to know more about these things. And then shortly after that, got a book on the subject and then learned to induce it. So it was then when I started to go through this whole process of experiencing these things that I started to have profound experiences of our interconnectedness with everything. So instead of just seeing what was around me as objects or other people or other animals or plants or whatever, I started to see the inherent connection and almost like a holistic idea to reality, if you like, that everything is one or linked, essentially. The first experience like that was I found myself over the New Forest in England and was going over the treetops and then moved down into the forest. And there was a flower just growing out of the ground. And in my out-of-body state, I could look right into the flower, right into the essence of its life, if you like. And I had this sense of the atoms and everything working through it, the nutrients coming up from the ground, the whole process of its life essentially going through that small thing that essentially we would usually ignore almost as an insignificant, just a plant But within this particular experience, I realized a sort of a greater complexity to it, in a sense. And then in another experience, I connected to all of the minds in the world. It felt like it was like in a single moment, there was like this lattice of consciousnesses, and I was one of them. It was like all of these thoughts and processes were all happening at once. And the way I see all of this relates to the out-of-body experience is it breaks down that sense of I am my body, or I am this personality, this person who is doing this now. And it takes you into this larger dimension of how consciousness works. So I think all of that led me to change my whole perception on how I interacted with other people, and also with, you know, the world around me. And for example, sort of led me to go vegan, for example, because I had this growing sense of we should not exploit and harm other forms of life. So in a sense, compassion and awareness of other forms of life came out of these direct experiences.
And to what extent, Graham, do you feel that the state or the condition of the planets, the condition of nature generally, reflects our condition as a human race?
I think it's all evolving. I kind of see human beings on a process of changing and evolving towards some maybe different, more benevolent form of nature than we currently have. So I think in a sense spirituality is the natural, it's the journey in a sense that we're on, that whole process of nature as we develop and as we change and as we adapt to what we're experiencing in the world. So essentially I see spirituality as a very natural thing, a very natural effect of these kinds of experiences or these kinds of awareness that you reach when you're in this kind of state. I mean, not just through the out-of-body experience, but through all of these kinds of states. I mean, the near-death experience is classic in terms of people coming back and saying that they felt transformed and that their whole life has taken on a different direction. I think the out-of-body experience is very similar in the sense that it has that same kind of effect, but maybe it's not quite as instantaneous and dramatic. It's more of a gradual flowering process. So that's how I see it.
That's amazing, Graham. I want to ask you, Graham, to tell us about your new book. I know that you have you published your first book some time ago, but you have a new book that's about to hit the shelves. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I think in many ways it was the book I was always meant to write. It's basically a practical book on how to do this for yourself. And I always think there's no better way really to deal with this whole subject than for the person to experience it for themselves. I mean, there's only so much that you can gain from someone describing something or telling you something. There's the real power in these kinds of experiences is doing it for yourself. But I also found that looking at a lot of the books that were out there, I found that there was a sense that they would just focus on visualization techniques. And I realized quite early on with my coaching people and with my sort of workshops and different things like that, that people are very different and that one set way of doing things doesn't work for everyone. For example, some people are more early morning people. They're more at their optimum. They're at their height of creativity and awareness, if you like, early in the morning. Other people are much better in the late evening or even in the middle of the night. So one of the first things I did was to use that and to work with the time of day that people are most at their full sort of potential. And then another thing is some people are very visual, they're painters, artists. Someone else might be very musical and they're much more sound based. So again, I would try to work with the sensory information that person feels most comfortable with in terms of how I would teach the techniques or what kind of techniques I would use. So basically the book is unique in the sense that it has a questionnaire in there. So the person reading it can work out what type of person they are and what will best suit them in terms of what techniques they use. So they follow through the questionnaire, note down what categories they fit into. And then when they go to the technique section, all of the techniques are categorized by the type of person they are. And as far as I'm aware, there's no book that's ever done that. And I've also put lots of techniques in there that have come from my direct work with developing these things in myself and in other people. So that, again, they've never been published anywhere else before. They're totally unique to my work. So it's a practical guide, but I think I hope it's the sort of next generation of practical guides to anything else before.
We're excited to get our hands on that book, Graham. When is that being published in the States?
It comes out on Kindle on the 1st of April, and then it comes out in print on the 8th of April.
Okay, and what is the title?
It's called Navigating the Out-of-Body Experience.
Brilliant. Well, I'll definitely get a copy of that. And apparently somebody in the chat room has just pre-ordered it. So okay. people are excited about it. I wanted to ask you as well, though, Graham, about your coaching work, because I know that you do one-on-one coaching for people that want to learn how to experience this work. Can you tell us a little about how you go about that and how listeners can get more information about your coaching work?
Well, to get more information, they can take a look at my website, which is grahamnichols.com. But basically the coaching came again out of that realization that people are very different and they need different qualities of help and guidance, and some people are particularly gifted in one area and not another. So I started more and more to realize that the most effective way to teach people was actually to work with them in this one-on-one way. So even in my workshops, I tend to have a period of time where I will engage one-on-one with the people, because I just think that that's the only way you can really give them the specifics that they need. So with the coaching, I usually do it over 4 or 8 weeks, depending on their previous experience or how much knowledge they've got and that kind of thing. And then I'll give them specific techniques catered to them. And I'll give them various different technologies. I've developed my own sound technologies that I call infraliminal technology, which comes from my immersive structures. I've also built these structures that use different things from hypnosis to virtual reality to help put people in different states of consciousness. The largest one was at the Science Museum in London in 2004. And that was a huge 10-meter square structure that reacted to the person. When they went in, they could guide. It was a one person at a time experience, and they could guide the three-dimensional virtual reality wherever they wanted to go and experience a sort of, it was based on sort of my out-of-body experiences in London. So it was a sort of psychic state of London, if you like. That was actually the kind of tagline of it. And so, yeah, they would move around in that kind of world. But in some of my other work, some of my other structures, I created these different sound frequencies and these different hypnotic inductions that were designed to help bring about the vibrational state, which is very common in out-of-body experiences. And from that state, it's much easier to get to the out-of-body state. So it would, I've sort of broken it down into stages so that when I work with people, they can really find what will work best for them personally.
That's incredible, Graham. I'm definitely going to be contacting you later this year to see if you can help me. I've had some experiences, but I'm really interested to learn proper techniques for traveling out of the body and connecting more deeply with myself and with spirit. I know that you're from the UK, Graham, but you live in Estonia. Do you find that some cultures are far more open to this kind of experience?
I think out-of-body experiences are pretty consistent throughout cultures. I think it's around sort of 10-15% of the population will have a spontaneous one at some point, depending on what statistics you read. But that seems to be around the level that we're talking about, which also seems to correlate with the amount of people who have near-death experiences, actually, as well. Sort of in the 10-20% of people who have a sort of cardiac arrest will have an NDE. So, but I have found being here for sure. I felt very much at home here, and there's a strong spirituality here. I mean, Estonia is actually known as one of the least religious countries in the world, if not the least religious country in the world. But interestingly, it has a very strong spirituality, a very strong sort of folk nature-based sort of spirituality that you become very aware of very quickly. So I feel very at home with that.
So do you plan to stay in Estonia, Graham? Do you feel that's your home?
It's hard to say, yeah, but I've been here 2.5 years and I'm very happy here at the moment.
Wonderful. Well, what do you have planned once the book is published, Graham? Are you offering workshops? What are your projects for the rest of the year?
I think I've got a few things in the pipeline. I'm working on some new technology, sort of trying to develop some new things along those lines. And I hope to do some more research as well. I want to get involved with actually doing some studies on OBEs, because there's not, like I said, there's not been that much done in recent years. So I'm trying to get something happening on that level. So yeah, I've got a few things lined up, and also some sort of documentary idea as well in the pipeline. So there's a few interesting things going on.
Wonderful. Well, we'll be following you, Graham, and keeping our eyes peeled for what you'll be doing later this year. You're an amazing guy. I want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. I know it's very late in Estonia, so you'll be having a long lie-in, presumably.
Yes, that would be good. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us, Graham, and I hope that you'll join us again. It was a really fascinating interview. I wish you all the very best of luck with your work.
Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it too.
Thank you, Graham. Take care.
Take care.
Wow, what an amazing guy and fascinating career and area of expertise. Now, as Graham said, if you'd like to visit his website to learn more about his work, it's grahamnichols.com, and Nichols is NICHOLLS, so that's two L's, grahamnichols.com. And if you want to find out about Graham on our website, you can do. It's psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just look for the guests tab and you'll see Graham's information is there as well. Now, I'd like to make a few announcements before we move to the second half of the show with our free on-air readings. So have your pen ready. I'll be announcing the telephone number in just a moment. If you were unable to catch our show last week, we discussed Reiki, and you'll find the archive link on the website as well as all of our other archive links for previous shows. That's psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just select the archives tab and you'll find there's a lot of good information, some great interviews on there. And please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our objective to connect with as many people as we can, so do go ahead and share the information. And be sure to visit our blogging website as well, psychicbloggers.com, where you can learn about all manner of subjects relating to the psychic field, from reincarnation to meditation. It's all kinds of information there. Please do check it out. And if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find that all of our psychics are verified, accuracy tested, and they each offer their unique gifts. So just go ahead and look at their profiles and choose the psychic that you feel most drawn to. I want to thank Doug as well, our producer, for all of the work he's doing behind the scenes and for maintaining such high standards at Psychic Access. Now, all of the co-hosts on our show are available at Psychic Access as well. So if you'd like a reading from one of the show hosts, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a website, you can earn 50 cents a minute on traffic that you refer through to psychicaccess.com. So if you'd like to learn more about that offer, please visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And lastly, if you like our show, please invite your friends to join us in the chat room and to listen live to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everybody, so we would like you to help us spread the word, and we really appreciate you being with us. Now, grab your pen and paper. If you'd like to call in for a reading a little later in the show, the telephone number is 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. Now, we're moving to that part of the show when the co-hosts interact and talk about their ideas and their what they've learned from the interview. So I want to ask you, Maureen, firstly, to tell us a little about your view on out-of-body experiences and particularly the use of drugs in out-of-body experiences.
Well, I was listening to the great interview, great guy, and really came across very articulated and very clear. Thank you. I just had to say that, and very nice voice. Anyway, Steve, I was listening, and you addressed something with him about the drug induced, and I didn't hear exactly, so I wanted to make sure I don't get this wrong. What did you ask him about? You did, didn't you? Am I right? Am I correct about that? It was my understanding that that was brought
well,
up.
Well, right? We talked a little about. I know that Graham's experiences are. You know, all scientific and based on his personal experience, and he's teetotal, and as he said, he's never used anything himself. But I asked him about anesthesia because I was laughing or making a comment about my wisdom tooth being removed, and
right,
I was asking him about the use of anesthesia and any connection there. So he commented on that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that's what I wanted to clarify that because that was great. Well, this is a thing about, and again, I'm going to make this perfectly clear to everybody out there and that will be listening later, of course, on the archives, that I am not an advocate. I need to say this. I do not advocate. I'm not an advocate or to the use of any potential harmful drugs in any way, people. Okay, so what I'm trying to bring up is it's interesting because I was a little bit confused until I found this information, but Timothy Leary, some of us may know of him, but he was I don't know, my co-hosts may know of him. He was a psychologist who experimented with LSD. There was several of them back in the day. But what I found out was near-death experiences can be produced using a drug called ketamine, I think it's pronounced, and which blocks the receptors in the brain. And so it's completely different from anything. It's not opiates and it's not related to LSD. So, it's interesting, Steve, because you brought up it's used for anesthesia. So use anesthesia, the people use this, to prevent patients from having near death experiences. So the thing of it is they use it mostly in veterinarians use it. And so it's not a controlled substance as of right now. But the difference is it can produce a near-death experience. So they're saying, I'm not saying I believe this or I'm saying I know anything, but including travel through the dark tunnel and so forth, or the conviction that one will feel dead, or the communication with God and visions and all that. But it's given intravenously, and it has a wait a minute. Oh, Maureen, isn't it a risk telling people this? Oh, I don't know.
Well, I'm just saying to you, isn't it, you know, I would hate somebody to get the impression that they should experiment.
No, I'm not. What I'm trying to convey to them, first of all, at the beginning I said I do not advocate this. Nobody should do this. But what I wanted to say, it's not something you can go out and get to have someone experiment. You can't go buy it. And the thing of it is, what I'm trying to convey is this. It comes down to the science of it. Come on, Steve. My integrity is good. Because
I'm not suggesting that you're I just want to make it really clear to our listeners that we're not suggesting they should try this.
As I said, I'm not advocating this. It's a potentially harmful drug in any way. But I wanted to say, because it's become a science. This is my point. The point of it is, because we're getting, you know, it all comes down to my daughter. She's a neuroscience major, and they're using a lot of new things that are now scientifically proven. Meditation for neuroscience, for the neurosurgeons and all that, is now finally scientifically proven to help our minds. But because, of course, with the out-of-body experience, even if it can be induced using drugs, even if it can or cannot be, the scientists conclude incorrectly that such mystical experiences that can reduce solely to brain chemistry. So the same is all incorrect logic. So it can't be applied. So any human experience would mean that the human experience is only a brain chemical function. And this is what I want people to know about, because anybody who's ever experienced such things as synchronicity, out of body, blah, 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 it's almost like it comes down to this. People in our brain our mind is nothing more than a brain. Chemicals is to assume a lot. So the bottom line is, the fact that near-death experiences can be reproduced in a laboratory proves that this is a real scientific phenomena. But by reproducing a near-death experience in this kind of setting, it satisfies the requirements for the scientific field method. But the scientific method has its limitations. So the bottom line is, what I'm trying to say is, those people who've had near-death experiences know it actually transcends the physical senses, and the body altogether, and it cannot adequately measure. So what many scientists fail to realize is that just because it cannot be measured does not mean it does not exist, scientifically speaking. So I just felt it was very important, and I'm sure the people that are listening are not ones that are going to go out and do drugs. And again, I'm not saying, but I had never ran across a veterinarian, and it is not actually outlawed. I mean, it's for veterinarians to use it, and for children, it's used in anesthesia. Now, I think if somebody was to take some pot and smoke pot, and they think they're going to be relaxed and maybe go into a better state, so be it. You know, some people have done that. You know, I myself not, but I've heard a lot about people smoking pot and doing that, like a meditative source. But, you know, I'm just saying, because of the scientific, and I felt it was important to bring that up, because people don't want to do that.
Well, thank you, Maureen. I think you always bring an interesting element to the discussion. I know that Brenda has had an out-of-body experience. Brenda, can you tell us what happened when you had your first out-of-body experience?
Well, you know, it's fascinating. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry. My little cord here jiggled. You know, I was always fascinated with the metaphysical stuff from such an early age. And one of the very first things I wanted to do was have an out-of-body experience. And I had this book. It's called The Tarot by Muni Sidhu. And it's an old book, but it's full of all this hermetic knowledge, you know. And there was a formula in there for astral projection, and of course I had to do it. And what it consisted of is, you would put this black spot on the wall, like tape it there, and then you'd lay in your bed and you'd concentrate, lay on top of your bed and concentrate and look at that dot until you went into it, and you just kind of like became one with it. And I would try it and try it. I'd come home from school and I'd try it and try it. I was like 16 years old, and that was a long time ago, honey. And then one day, I was doing the meditation, and I felt like I was like lifting out of my body, and it was like I was becoming weightless. And then I floated probably not that high, probably about 3 feet above my body, and I went across the room, and I looked over, and I saw myself lying on the bed, and that was my first experience. I've never forgotten it. Now, since I have had other ones, but I believe that that one, the first one I had, is very typical of people who have their first out-of-body experiences. Yeah. Floating and rushing and then seeing your body lying there. Yeah, it was fascinating.
Well, thank you for sharing that, mm-hmm. Brenda. It's fascinating to hear about your experience. Now, Bobby, how about you? What do you think of out-of-body experiences, and have you ever had one?
I have had one. It seems more like in my dream state when that happens. I've not consciously chosen to go out of body and then have it happen. But it's been mostly dream states where I knew that I was. And I've had some good experiences, and I've had some really scary experiences, almost like it felt like I was going to have a heart attack. It was so, because I'm deathly afraid of heights. And so I remember one of them, like Maureen was saying, but I was like really high up in the air, and I just was so afraid I was going to fall. And so I was panicking, I think, in that. But I've never consciously tried to go out of body. I this is an area I deeply believe in, though, and know that it's possible, and have worked with people that have had them. I think we need to be responsible out of body, though. You know, I've known some people who would do that and just because they could and be over at a friend's house or go in on other people, you know, in their house and things like that. And I think you still have to be respectful, don't you? I think it's like if you're going to go into somebody's house, you have to knock on the door first, or at least call and say, "Is it all right if I come over?" You know, I know a lot of people are kind of irresponsible with it, but yeah, I love it. And you, I assume, you've talked about a little bit of your out of body experiences, haven't you, Steve?
Well, I used to occasionally find that spirit would levitate me, but that's not really, strictly speaking, that's not an out of body experience because you're physically lifted. But that was when I was a kid, and then I had an accident about 10, 11 years ago. And I was resuscitated, so in effect I passed and had a near-death experience that was extremely, extremely powerful. I've never felt such a sense of safety and compassion.
Wow.
And it really, really was great evidence for me about the afterlife and the fact that when we do transition, we're very well taken care of. It was a great experience.
You know, it's interesting to me because I've never had one of those either. It's very interesting to me why I do what I do today. I mean, there's a deep belief, obviously, that I know where it all comes from. But I've not had near-death experience. I've not seen angels, you know, like some people have said, you know, at the end of their bed, and it's just big glowing light, and I mean, like a real visual experience. And my OBEs have been, you know, what they have been, and so it's just interesting to me how, and still backs up the fact that people who are thinking that they're not psychic or they're not intuitively inclined, how you don't have to be, because I've not had any of those experiences, and yet I'm doing what I do today. There's just a deep knowingness, a deep belief. And I think, and most of that for me has just come from self-exploration, not from some of these other experiences that I would love to have. You know, I would love to experience those types of things. And still open, I think, you know, the more that we expand, I think that eventually those types of things will happen more and more. But interesting.
Well, thank you, Bobby. Now, Maureen, I know you've had an out-of-body experience as well, and you alluded to that. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, I'm having one right now over to you. Get ready.
You're going to come and slap me.
Get some good. I have some. Oh, wait, I can't whip it. Never mind. Yes, Steve. Steve, I adore you. Yes, I can. And I'm on my way. After the show, I'm zipping over there. Forget about Newport Beach. anyway, yes, I have. And here it goes. And I was around 15. And I don't like thinking about this, but I started pondering it for a while, and it came to me. Yes, I have. I was body surfing in Huntington Beach, California. Well, you know, we're from California, three of us here on the show, but I was body surfing. I was, a real good swimmer and surfer and whatever. So I was in Huntington Beach, and the waves were well, and there was a big set that came in after. And if anybody knows about body surfing, you're getting pushed under a wave. Steve, I don't know if you have to come to California so I could kick your butt right into the water. And you can feel the feeling. It's pretty intense. But you will go body surfing, and the waves, and they'll crash, and you're spinning around. It's pretty intense. And even if you're the best swimmer in the world, it can be kind of scary. But this happened to me, but I saw a huge, right when I came up for air, everything's usually fine. That's part of body surfing. I saw a huge set coming in, so I started swimming for it so I could get under it before it crashed. I was like, I hardly had any time to breathe, and I went under. And I was gone. I was a goner. I was absolutely a goner. And I thought, oh my, how sad. I was a competitive swimmer, and this is the way it's going to be. And I saw myself, it wasn't like a lovely out of body experience, but it wasn't like I was trying to, but I did see, and I'm not calling it a near death. I don't know what you would call it, because they go parallel, right? Near death or, you know, the out of body. But I saw myself, I was watching myself, and I knew I had to take in water. I couldn't hold it anymore. And everything started in slow motion, because everything goes so fast when you're being mangled by waves. And so, like, I finally decided just to let it happen, you know, and it was really hard, because when you're feeling like you're drowning, it's an awful way to go. So I, all of a sudden, I saw myself, I was looking right at my face. And so my body was right there in front of my body under the water still. What had happened, a riptide had come in. So I was way out there. But the next thing I know, I was on the beach, and the gorgeous lifeguard, I might add, was doing a number on me. And that's all I remember. But yes, I do feel, I don't know if I believe, all I know is what I experienced. And I do know, I would call that something a little bit different than the norm. I saw myself, and I had my eyes wide open, staring so closely at myself, where my other eyes were closing. My eyes were wide open, watching me. And it wasn't like I was in fear of watching me. You know, someone take, you know, I'm not a fish. I don't think so. But I would say yes, I have had, and it was scary. And that's the sad part, because it was so scary. But on the other end, the part of me that was watching me go wasn't so scared. Do you follow me? I hope what I'm saying. Come on, you must follow me on this one.
Absolutely, Maureen.
Great. So always. So I made it. I had a lifeguard pull me out, and my friends were scared because they got in okay. But
Of the lifeguard. I was distracted.
Oh, a good looking one. Yeah, he pulled me out. That was very
slow. Calm down.
I was 15. Come on. Anyway, I what was sad is I was really fearful. I was surfing during that time. I started to get really freaked out about the waves after that. And I loved the waves, but they were cruel to me that day. Or I was not right to be out there. But yes, I have had. And I would call that, I don't know what everybody else thinks about that. What would you guys think? Is that an experience you would say?
It is. It definitely is. It's an out-of-body experience that a lot of people have when they're brought back from the brain.
That's exactly. But it was not comfortable for that other part of me, but for the one where I was looking at myself, it wasn't. I was okay. You know, I gave into it. But for me, it wasn't. It was really intense. But, yes, so I have in the water. But the dolphins weren't there to help me. Anyway, so there you go. And it was not drug-induced. and no one should ever do drugs to try to go out of body, because it's not the same, okay? Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Maureen. Now, Brenda, do you believe that children and animals have out-of-body experiences?
You know, I believe, I have to tell you, we talk a lot about cats on the show, because everybody has a cat, and they're so mystical. But I truly believe that animals and children have sometimes spontaneous out-of-body experiences. And I had this cat, and we were very close. He's since passed away. But at the time, you know, I had a friend, and we used to talk about a lot of, you know, this type of metaphysical stuff. And we had planned that maybe we'd get together, and you know, I'd never been to his house. So one night in meditation, I was just kind of, you know, meditating and stuff. And then all of a sudden I saw my cat, and my cat was in the meditation with me, and he was jumping over a stone wall, and he was going into a house, and then I could see through the cat's eyes. I looked into the house, and I saw everything I described, and I thought, this is so strange. So the next day, I went, and I don't know if that's something like an out-of-body or transference or what. So the next day I said to my friend, I go, you know, I had the weirdest thing happen. My cat, you know, came into my meditation, took me to this house, and then I described his whole house, the colors, where his sofa was, and everything. And so I believe that animals have, they can do it like, it's a natural thing for them, like when they're sleeping or, you know. To me, it was something I'd never forgotten. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of stories like that, you know. With the cats, especially.
I have my three cats sitting right next to me here. They all look very calm, and I'm just wondering if they're traveling out of their bodies.
Well,
are they in a pyramid?
They do. And you know what they do? Oh, I love that pyramid.
They are in a pyramid, but I wish they would get up and do the vacuuming.
Well, you know, my co-pilot just came in once we started talking about that, Diva, and I think that they do it all the time. I think that that's their ability.
Yeah. Meow, and my mother's probably listening.
Here she
meow.
Is right now. Come on, Diva.
And Steve, your cats last week were a big hit with my mom and Woody. So meow. Okay.
They're funny. They're wonderful. And I don't give them any drugs.
Thank God.
No, I have to say something about that ketamine. If the kids are finding it on the street, it's K or something like that. Yeah, it's bad.
To find him on the street, really. I am going to research that. If that's the case, I'm always one to advocate and start marching up and bat. They shouldn't be able to find it unless the veterinarians are bad. Well, I'll check it out. Thank you, Brenda, for bringing that up.
Yeah.
But I'm still missing integrity. I'm missing integrity.
Miss integrity.
But the kids shouldn't be able. They should be trying. They're not trying to do out of body experience with it. Then they're probably trying.
Oh, no.
Okay, kick their butts. Okay.
Need to get out in the street with that whoop-ass, Maureen, and, you know.
Exactly.
I'm not a high priority, or should But, hey, Bobby, what are your thoughts, having listened to Graham and based on your experience of mediumship, what do you feel there's any correlation between out-of-body experiences and mediumship, for example?
I don't feel that there is. I can always be wrong. I think that this source that we're in, there's so many different facets to it, isn't there? There's the psychicness, out of body experiences. There's the astrology. There's, I mean, all these different areas that are all connected. It's just, for me, that's another channel on the radio. Not to say that I haven't had those, now that I'm thinking about it and talking about it, that I haven't had those types of experiences. Remember, we had talked a while back about like being taken out of our bodies and either on a type of journey where I'm doing readings also. You know, I think I can't remember what show that was that we were talking about, but it feels like I was taken also and I'm doing readings on the other side. And somebody else was talking about, yeah, downloaded with information sometimes, like you're going to school, or like that's when we get downloaded and you wake up like you haven't had any sleep at all. So again, I just think it's just a whole nother area to all of this. And, you know, I'm all for it. If it helps me tune in more, if it helps me communicate better with the other side, then absolutely I'll throw that up to my guides to have them, you know, bring me more of those types of experiences. I don't seek for any of that. It just, I think it happens if it's supposed to happen and if it's appropriate for me. You know what I mean? Like I'm more into other areas and I feel that as my expansion happens, if certain experiences happen, it was because it was the right time and it was necessary for my advancement. But otherwise I don't, you know, I haven't purposely sought to go out of body or that type of thing.
Well, thank you, Bobby.
Interesting stuff. Welcome, Steve. Thank you.
And on that note, we'll be taking some readings. So I'm going to call out the telephone number again. We've got to that part of the show where we're going to give our reading. So you can either call in or you can ask a question from the chat room. But we do take the callers first because of the wait time. So I'll repeat the number for you. It's 724-444-4851. That's 724 444-4851. Please do be aware that each call is automatically placed on hold, so you get to listen to the show, and please do be very clear with us about your question as well. We just take one question per person. Now, our first caller is calling from Washington State for Brenda.
Hi, Washington State. How are you this evening?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. This is Becca.
Hi there, Becca. What can I do for you, honey?
Hi. Actually, this is... I was kind of debating, but, you know, I just wanted to thought maybe I'd just do something fun. And I know a lot of this has to do with me, myself, but just wondering if you can see anything in the near future or somewhere in the future, Mr. Wright popping into my life.
Mr. Wright. Ooh, that's always the question. Ms. and Mr. Wright. Let's check it out. Let's take a peek here. Well, you definitely are ready. Ah, this is, you know what? I see a 4-month period, and I see a man entering, and I do see that he's an air sign, so he could be a Libra or Aquarius is what I'm getting, and I see that it's friendship first, and the form of communication with this man is not going to be face-to-face at first. It looks like it could even be by email, phone, or something like that. There's going to be an immediate attraction, and I do believe that a friend of yours is going to kind of encourage you to do some things that will bring this man into your life, like maybe go places where you meet people, or it almost feels like you might communicate with him via computer first. Mm-hmm. I see it looks like a happy union. A happy union. You've got the Sun card. I have to tell you honestly, that means, you know, ooh, you know, this could be something fun. This could be something very honest. And I see you in a position of power, because it looks like your last relationship, you felt powerless in that last relationship. So, you know what? The pendulum is swinging the way where you're going to be the queen in this relationship, as opposed to how you felt in the last one. I also see that the man works in the field of law.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the last comment, I'm sorry.
It looks like this man works in the field of law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How fun.
All right, honey. Well, listen.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Good luck to you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Brenda. Okay, the next call is from Virginia, and this call's for you, Bobby.
Hello, Virginia. Virginia, call from Virginia. Or not.
Maybe not.
Are you there from Virginia? Well, let's find out in just one second. I'll tell you if she's there or not, or where else we should move on to. How about Colorado? If you're on the phone and you're from Colorado and your name is Bobby C., tell me.
Yes.
Is it Bobby C.?
No, it's Robin.
Oh,
Robin,
man.
That's my screen name.
I only got that because there's somebody in our chat room said they were from Colorado, and it was Bobby C. I thought I was trying to be magnificent there for a minute, but not even close. Sorry, Robin. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. What do you want to talk about? What can we talk about?
Oh, I need to know if my career path is going to be changing in the foreseeable future, like the next 5 years.
Oh gosh, yeah, way before then. You're already making plans, because where you're at right now isn't good for you, and you've recognized that, or it was good for you in the beginning, but you're it's kind of, you know how sometimes you just go as far as you can go, and it's you know, there you could continue to do it and probably be happy for a while, but being who you are and liking change and keeping it, you know, shaken up and liking new challenges and wanting to stretch yourself, which is a great way to be. You'll be leaving long before then. I would probably give it another year and a half before everything really starts looking serious, because you still have some things to wrap up where you're at right now, and then definitely start making huge progress towards towards your newer career. There's two different things I'm sensing that you're wanting to do. What are those?
I know what I want to do. I mean, I've talked to Steve a little bit before. Transpersonal psychology, but then the whole other thing is maybe being a business intuitive as a potential.
Here's what my suggestion would be. I like the sound of both of those. And if you can, try not to just make it one or the other. In other words, go in stair steps. So the first one, I like what did you call it? Transpersonal psychology? Is that what you called it?
Yeah.
So I like the feel of that one being first. And I think that will expand into the business intuitive. Do you see what I mean? So you don't have to think, well, which path should I do? Do them both, right? Successful people always think and, not or. So it doesn't have to be one side or the other. So I would set your pursuits because I think the transpersonal psychology will open you up and set you into a more of an expansion and intuitive knowingness that you already have, but it will expand into more. And then as you work through that, you'll be networking, kind of setting yourself up and paving the way for the business intuitive. Because, like I say, I like the sound of both of them, but it feels like one after the other for me, not necessarily both at the same time. Do you see what I mean?
Okay.
So it just feels like the first stop is transpersonal psychology, and then the next stop will be, you know, the business intuitive, and then it won't stop there. I think you'll go on to do other things after that, but you know, you'll be in both of these, or at least on your way to doing these for quite a while. So I wouldn't look for beyond that for several years. But yeah, you're already well on your way because this is the creation process. You're in the factory right now figuring out what you want to do, wanting to do more. You're starting to close down on what your work is right now. You know what I mean? You're just in the creation process right now, and that feels really good. So just allow it to keep happening that way as long as it does. And but like I say, you're definitely in the right position and in the right pathway right now.
Okay. Cool. Thanks,
okay.
Bobby.
All right, Robin. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bobby. Okay. Now, the next caller is for Maureen from Texas.
Okay. Hi, Texas. This is Maureen. Hello, Texas.
Hello.
Hi, this is Maureen. What's your name, please?
Hi, Maureen. I'm Bertha.
Bertha, hi.
Huh?
What can I focus in on for you to help you?
Just wondering. My boyfriend and I, for the past 3 weeks, have been, or he's been pretty distant. Hardly any initiation on any type of contact with me. I've given him several opportunities recently to be honest and either tell me that, you know, he'd rather go all his separate ways. But he's not very clear. I think his actions have spoken louder than his words at this point. And just wondering where this is headed. Is it something I need to be patient, or is it something I need to let go of?
Okay, got it. So you're kind of feeling like you can't really trust. He's giving you mixed messages, and there's obviously a reason why. Maybe you're asking me the question you are, because besides the mixed messages going on now, there's probably some past issues that have never been resolved is what I'm getting. But with that said, you know, you two have, you know, I really do get that you two have a really great connection. I mean, in the recent past. And I do see a home. Did you live in a home together? Were you looking for a home or to locate in or do something different? There's a home shared. It looks very positive. And I don't know if it was something that was pushed away or whatever. Did you speak about, because you're on the right track. You know, Bertha?
Uh-huh.
Bertha? What's his name?
Yes. His name is Julio.
Julio. Were you, was there a time where you two were looking at, if you weren't already living or redoing a home? I see a new home, an opportunity. There was a new home or location to get at being together at such.
I'm actually building a home recently, and I brought it up about 2 weeks ago about the possibility of moving in together.
Okay. it's so positive. It really is. And you know, this is my feelings. First of all, I'm getting you. I know I didn't hear you real well, but this is what I think you mentioned, something about his work. And this is, I feel that there's something going on with his work. It's disappointing. He's overqualified. He's not happy. I see it to be a temporary thing. It's going to be not happening long. And there's a lot of judgment coming from family about his life or what he's expected of. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. You two, I think he's more influenced by what other people, he's highly influenced by what other people think or his family thinks. I feel you should hang in there with them. And I feel that this is a matter of time. I feel that he's going to get, he needs to feel he's adequate. He needs to feel, and I do see as far as his money or financial state of things, I think right now he might feel fear of poverty. It might just be extreme fear. It doesn't mean that he's in poverty, but I see it turning around and I see him feeling much better about himself. And I think, and I say, you guys really had some solid, good foundation. I like this home I'm seeing, and you said you're building. I feel you should hang in there. I really do. I'm not condoning his behavior or how he's been behaving, but I don't feel it's really directed towards how he feels about you. It's just because it is what it is with all that stuff on the outside, you know, that we go through. It's like there's family and stuff. So I see this to be good if you choose to. If you choose to. And I feel that he looks at you with a lot of he respects you. He just doesn't have a lot of respect for himself, and it's sad because he has a lot going for him. He's just in a bad way right now with things. And things will it's all temporary. It will change. He'll get it together. Okay? Okay. I hope that helped you.
Thank you.
I hope you followed me. So. Well, you followed me, I hope, on this. And but yeah, you two are well together, you know, really. Just
fine.
Give him a little time. He'll be okay. It won't be a long time.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you,
take
Maureen.
Care.
Appreciate
You're
it.
Welcome, Bertha. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Maureen. That's a great reading. Now, the next caller is from Indiana, and I'll be taking this call. Who's calling from Indiana?
It's Maybelline, Steve.
Sorry, your name is Maybelline?
Yes.
Maybelline, how can I help?
I was wondering if my boyfriend is going to contact me. It's been over a week.
It's been over a week. Let me see. Well, the first thing I want to say to you, Maybelline, is I feel as though the situation between the two of you has been challenging for longer. It doesn't feel like a week, and it doesn't feel like the first time. I'm drawn to a period of about six or seven weeks or months, but it feels more like months. And I do feel that you'll hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that you'll hear from him in the next 2 days, actually. But I feel challenges between the two of you, and they need to be addressed. I feel, from what my guide's shown, that the two of you really do need to talk about what you want and what you expect from each other. I feel uncomfortable about the fact that he hasn't been in contact for a week. I feel that you've been disappointed for some time. It doesn't feel like the first time that you felt disappointed or isolated in this relationship.
Definitely not the first time that he's done this, but...
So how do you feel you'll respond when you do hear from him in a couple of days?
Like I always do, relieved that he contacted me. And then back to my nerves when he doesn't. It's a complicated situation.
I know, relationships are complicated, but I feel from my guide that it's time for change, time for a different strategy or approach. So when you do speak with him, I feel really inclined to encourage you to really think about how you feel and think about articulating how you feel about these episodes, because it does affect you. I feel as though it really lowers your energy. You've got a big heart and you're very sensitive. And I feel that even when you are in contact and when the situation is different, you feel lonely at times, but you don't really articulate that. You tend to keep the feeling to yourself. and put him and everybody else first. And that concerns me because you're a great girl and you deserve the opportunity to express how you feel and to find solutions.
Yeah, you're right on with being sensitive and putting everybody else before me. I always do that.
You must also put yourself first. So remember how important it is for you to be clear about how you feel and what you want and what your expectations are of other people. Okay? I wish you lots of luck. But as I said, I feel that he'll be in touch in the next 2 days. So it's not long.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. You're welcome. Good luck. Okay. Caller is from Knoxville, Tennessee. And this call is for you, Brenda.
Oh, I get Knoxville tonight, huh? Hi, Knoxville. Hi there. Knoxville, are you there?
I'm not in Knoxville, but I'm close.
Oh, okay. Where are you?
Oh, it's actually me. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello? Oh, I'm so sorry. This is Penny.
Okay, Penny, what can I do for you tonight, honey?
I have a question. I found out my son passed away 4 weeks ago, and I keep getting these visions of two angels at the foot of his bed, and I also see my sister holding his hand, and she has passed. I was wondering, am I imagining this, or is this real? And a lot of other different things are going on as well here at the house. I'm seeing visions and things are happening, and I'm just wondering, am I imagining this, or is there something coming through?
Well, you know, when someone passes away, you know, it's kind of like a ripple in a pond, you know, and I really feel that there's a lot of spirit activity around you right now. You're kind of in the middle of it. And there are those who have passed over, particularly your sister, who's come to kind of ease your son's way, because what I'm getting is he was pretty confused at the way he passed. Like, he wasn't expecting it. And so he needs to have that bridge of someone that knows him and loves him to kind of show him the ropes on the other side. I do believe that this activity that's going on, you know, and it could even be if it's happening in the dream state, it's happening. Because, and are you seeing him in your dream state?
Well, that's funny that you asked that, because I had a very upsetting night last night, because he told me goodbye. He was here with me, and I felt that he really had been here with me. Mm-hmm. And he said he had something else to do, and he was leaving. And I seen him. I'm sorry.
I know, honey.
I seen him walking down the road just so clearly,
mm-hmm.
so healthy looking. So I was wondering
if... He was really there. He was really there. They're just not here in the physical body, but he was there in spirit form. And I believe he's going to continue to appear to you for several years until he, you know, gets ready to move on. And you know, this is interesting that I see too, is you didn't know too much about his life in the recent times, in the recent years. But I do see that he's going to reveal an awful lot about it, and you'll get to know about it more than you knew when he was living.
If that's what's happening, I'm having these visions I don't understand of places.
You have to consider
I've never
it as a gift.
To.
It's a gift so that you can have a window into what's happening here.
Yeah, it's like slowly there's been a puzzle unfolding on a daily basis, and it's just kind of like blowing my mind. The info I'm just seeing, and just like intuitively,
intuitively finding out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking that this is for real.
This is for real, and you know what? I'd write it down. I'd start a diary. I'd start a book because these are important. There's important messages in it, especially when he comes to you and talks to you, and I believe he's going to carry on whole conversations with you, too. Mm-hmm.
I think so, too. I really do.
You should look forward to your next encounter.
Well,
a lot of spirit activity. There's four spirits around you, maybe more. About six around you, with your son is in the middle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being surrounded. But
you're being surrounded, but it's a good thing. It's a transitional thing for him, but it's also protective. It doesn't feel negative at all.
He's protecting me, right?
Yes, from the other side. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel negative. It feels very protective. It feels almost like it was karma the way it happened, you know, because when I look inside of him and look where, you know, there were times in which he wasn't of this world anymore, and this was his time to go. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, honey. Take care.
And it was very nice talking to you.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a nice evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Brenda. That was beautiful. Very, very comforting. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, now we have a caller from Virginia for Bobby.
And I'm going to guess that this name is D. D. I'm picking
sure.
up D.
Sure, Bobby.
What a psychic.
I tell you, all it takes is a little psychicness and a chat room. Hi, Dee.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question for you. Just trying to find out if you see any relationship coming my way anytime soon. Something tangible.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Something of substance. Something meaningful.
Oh, something of substance is different. See, tangible and substance. And then it's like, yeah, no, I just see a relationship in your head, Dee. That's all. Nothing tangible. Just dreams of cabana boys, you know. You and Steve share the same dreams. But it's, nobody's meant to be alone. You know, there's lots of relationships. Sometimes we have to change our perception of what a relationship is, for one. Secondarily, and this is all coming to you from guides, okay? This isn't me just coaching you out of nowhere. This is what your guides are bringing you to help you set up for a good relationship, okay? And get yourself ready, which I feel is an important step. So, changing perception of what a relationship is to you and what you expect out of a relationship and what you want out of a relationship. Now, you really narrowed down what it is you want out of a relationship from your last relationship, this very last one that you were in. Really set the tone for what it is that you're wanting from future relationships. So what I think they're recommending you do is to either write those down or focus on those types of things of what it is that you deserve, want, you know, what it is that you have come to know from the contrast that you just got over with. Are you with me? You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
And so once you've put all of that together, then you start creating that space to have the relationship come to you. Now, you're a lovely person. There's nothing I think that I'm looking into you that I think needs to change. Maybe a little less cynicism about the fact that you deserve a relationship or that a relationship can't come to you or that you can't draw to you a good type of a person. But other than that, as I'm looking at you, there, you really have a lot of it going on. You know, it seems sometimes, and you're not the only one that does this, but it seems sometimes that we put on the shelf some of our best qualities so that we can be with somebody. You know what I mean? So it's like we'll lower ourselves so that we, at least we can be in a relationship, you know, with whatever person. And so I would also recommend that maybe you don't do that as well. You need to keep your standards, and that way you'll no longer draw those moths to a flame. It'll actually be somebody who's on your particular vibrational level. So all of that's the coaching answer. And now you just want to know, gosh darn it, when is this man coming? Right? I know, you're like, Bobby, that's brilliant. I'm with you. I understand. Just tell me when the damn guy is coming. That's all I want to know. I just need to know. So I got it. So if you start working towards this, a substantial relationship, one that has depth and more meaning to it, you'll have one within half a year. At least 3 to 4 months. Now, that may seem like a long time, but remember, we're talking tangible, some depth to the relationship, somebody who's on your vibration. And again, there's just a couple of things that you need to tweak so you're right there in that vibration with a good relationship. Do you see what I mean? And if you employ all of that, you'll be able to put yourself on that vibration. And within about 4 months, you'll have that relationship to you. But if you choose not to do any of that, I have no doubt that you're going to be able to have a relationship. You know, you'll meet somebody and have a relationship before the end of the month. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, but I understand what you're saying. And everything that you've said is things that I've been working on, and I've been doing a lot of work on myself, so to speak. And I know what I want. And no, I am not going to settle.
Good for you. See, now that sounded really good. But right now, you're also feeling good. I'm talking about it. Some of those moments when you're feeling a little bit down because nobody's there, it's not like you're willing to settle, but at the same time, your perception changes a little bit, like all of ours do. But what you just said now, that's perfect. You're totally in vibration with that, and that's brilliant. So good for you. So in other words, I believe you. And that's I would definitely keep it there. Now, if you do that, again, I can see a substantial relationship coming within 4 months. Don't look at it 4 months as a long time. Look at it that's a great opportunity to create that space. You may meet people in between time, you know what I mean, which just helps you even adjust more and more and more and more. But within 4 months, I'm really getting a strong feeling about that, okay?
And I'm okay with the 4 months. I can wait.
Good for you. Please do, because that's when it'll be better for you. You know,
okay.
But
thanks.
You're in a really
thanks,
good
Bobby.
Place. So I really like where you're at. So that's good news. Believe me, there's some women I'm like, oh, girl, you don't want a man right now. Trust me, you know, crotch grabbing, spitting, get me a beer, man. You don't want that right now. We've had that, done with that, ready to move on, right? So, okay.
Well, thank you, Bobby. I appreciate your help. Thanks.
All right, sweetie. Take care.
Thank you, Bobby. But she's not in Tennessee.
She's what?
She's not in Tennessee.
Yeah.
I missed the joke. Think about it, Bobby. Listen to the archive, my friend. Okay, now next caller from New Jersey for Maureen.
Okay, hi New Jersey. This is Maureen. Hello.
Hi Maureen. This is Deborah. How are you doing?
Fine. Did you say Deborah? Deborah?
Yes.
Hi Deborah. Okay. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Where do you see? Do you see a promotion anywhere in my future? I hate my job.
Okay, so you're looking in the where you're at right now in the company corporation name what you're in.
I would like to stay in the company. I'm in a military base. I would like to stay there, but
oh, got
get a promotion into a different job.
Not if they're not going to give you a promotion. I understand that. You don't want to be taken for. Yeah, I got it. Okay. Yeah. And you deserve, yes, I can understand. You know, this is what I'm getting. I feel that, you know, you know what? I feel that there's been a big delay in getting this in the first place. You deserved this back in November. It looks like there was something that would have been substantial, whatever that amount is for certain people, $1 million, some people are hundreds of dollars, whatever it was. There was something that is delayed. And I don't know. I just get November. I just feel that there was some changes that went on and you were still there. Some people had left where you're at. But right now, I mean, I see that everything that you're doing, you can't do anything different. You're at your best. You fuse well with everybody. You work well with people. Everything is, and you're actually, you know, very balanced, whether you feel so or not. I am saying you are. but you know, well, I'm not saying you have to, you know, believe in what exactly I'm saying, but what I'm feeling is you're really on the right track with this. By having your objective and your priorities being, yes, you are right to think so, because this makes sense. Something passed you up. You should have had a promotion prior to even asking me about it tonight. And right. I, for whatever reasons, are you following me on this?
I just got a promotion, but it was a salary-type promotion. What I'm looking for is
your
a different
position.
Job.
Title? A position, title, promotion?
Yeah, I want to go from medical records to coding.
Okay, I see. You're asking him. Okay, that's interesting. Well, you know what? I still feel that you there's some more – well, it's still delayed. There's more of the money part. You know what's interesting to me? I understand where you're coming from. Unless there's somebody that else is – you know, you've – okay, this is what I'm getting. I feel very strongly that you need to make this happen, because what I am seeing is that you're going to turn things around right now. I get that there's someone that's getting all the glory or the praise or the credit and acknowledgement, whereas you're not. And I feel that you're the one that actually should be by you getting acknowledged. But somebody's getting the right in the parade. It's like in the days of the kings or whoever they were, and the other people that would dress them and they would be doing all the work. But there was a parade for the big king. you need to get acknowledged, and by you, right now is a good time to try to make, and you're not going behind anybody's back, is a fact. And I do see that will be changeable. Now, be very careful. There's a lot of there's one person, very manipulative, troublemaker around. I feel that you're going to not fight for this, but I think that you need to be very assertive and bring this about to make this happen. And I feel that you will absolutely get what you're desiring and what you deserve. I see you being very successful in this, but somebody else is getting too much, and they have that position title or whatever, which should actually be your right to have so, because you're doing everything. You deserve it. I just feel you shouldn't go along. I don't see you going along with it much longer. I do feel absolutely you can make this happen. You're on the right track. If you have any plan of how to stand by or make it known more so, not be, I don't know. It's a really good time. You're able to fuse well with people to be able to make this happen, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense.
Okay, go for it. I see very successful. Next 3 months, yes. And more money, too, I see. More.
Great.
I mean,
I need the money.
Yeah, and you deserve it. But, you know, you need to step it up and say, look what I've been doing. Someone else is getting away. There you have it.
Yeah,
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you so very much.
Have a good night. Bye bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Thank you, Maureen. Well, we're going to take a question from the chat room, and I'm going to take this question. And this is from Magdalena, who's asking if she'll get the real estate job. Magdalena, I feel that you can get this job. I feel that you need to follow up. I don't feel you simply receiving a phone call or a letter saying you've got the job. I feel that there's more conversation needed, but I do feel that you can get the role if you want it. What I would say to you is, I don't feel it's the job for you in the long term. So if you do take it, I still think you should reflect upon what you want to be doing in the longer term. Because whilst it's a challenging role, I don't think you're going to find it meaningful enough. I just get this sense that you are going for this role because it's an opportunity that's near on the horizon, but that you need to give much deeper consideration to what you actually want to be doing in the longer term and what will most fulfill you. So I feel that you need to reflect more and really connect with the type of work that you want to be doing. So in essence, yes, I feel you can get this role, but I still feel that you need to think about what it is you want to be doing in the longer term, because if you do take that role, I don't feel you'll be in the position for more than about 18 months through choice, but I feel that you'll transition to what you really want to be doing. So I really encourage you to reflect upon that and to go ahead confidently, and wish you all the very best. Now, we've got another question from the chat room, Brenda, for you, and this is from Julie. She's asking if she'll receive her settlement soon.
Okay, let's take a peek. Well, the first thing I see is that it's been in the works for a while. It's been promised. It's been in the works for a while. I'm also seeing that there may even be some more information this month that they ask you for before the settlement. They give you that settlement. And it's a communication from a man. And this man, I don't know if he's your friend. He might be kind of fishing around to give you like one offer. And if you take that one, then you know, it's going to be over. But you really need to stick to your guns. I really see that the receiving of it and is going to be within 3 months. And I see a celebration at that point. So it looks like you'll get what you want. But it's not going to happen when you think it is. It feels like delays, like there's been delays before. But I feel by June you're celebrating, and I'm also seeing that something you've always wanted to do, you'll be able to do, and it involves travel. Yeah, that's what I see.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Brenda.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Good luck, Julie. Yeah, awesome show. I just love Graham. He was a great guest.
Yeah, and you can tell as well that he is so genuine. He's such a nice person, and you just can feel that when he speaks. And as Maureen said, you know, he's really nice to listen to. He's got a beautiful tone to his voice, and I'm intrigued by his coaching because he's obviously got a lot to offer, and it's definitely a field I'd like to learn more about.
He's grounded. He's very grounded.
Estonia. It sounds mysterious, like maybe vampires and werewolves and all that good stuff.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful place, and I know that he's very passionate about Estonia and really enjoys living there, but travels quite a lot. Well, guys, that brings us to the end of another wonderful show. I want to thank Doug for all of his work behind the scenes, keeping us on track as our executive producer, and thank you to my co-hosts as well. Now, Bobby, you're hosting next week's show. What do you have planned for us?
It's called Quantum Angel Healing, and I threw in the quantum because of you, because I know you like that stuff. But, we have one of our names, Ava Maria, and wonderful guest. Just her energy and her light just feel amazing to me. So she'll be talking about quantum angel therapy and healing and how she goes about that and discussing her book as well. So more on angels. If you're an angel person, you'll love the show.
Great, Bobby. We'll look forward to that.
Sounds good. We're looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
And I would like to say goodbye, and Mother, I'm going to be late picking you up. Sorry.
Is that like a Carol Burnett tug at your ear type of thing that you just did there?
I had to throw that in there. She'll know. It's a special code. Thanks.
Okay.
Great show, you guys. Great show.
Yeah, great show, Steve.
Thanks, guys. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody, and we'll look forward to you joining us again next week at 8 o'clock Eastern Time for Bobby's show about the angels.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.